This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And we begin a new series on Ozarks with today's program.
We do. We like our series around here.
We do. We do indeed. This one is designed to ask people who know more about things than we do about those things.
Yes, we're asking people to tell us three things that we should know about a specific subject.
Because here's the deal. There's a lot of information out there.
So much.
But there are basic things we should know either about the economy, about the environment, and today, somewhat about education.
Okay.
School years are starting this week and next week for just about everybody that's in grades K through 12 in Arkansas in our listening area. Sometimes you're going to a new school, and sometimes that can be intimidating. So I decided to ask Lynn Webb, who is a professor of communications at the University of Arkansas, about three things that can help ease the transition into a new school for students.
I think the young people, especially if they're transitioning from one school to another, like from elementary school to middle school or middle school to high school, they're not sure what to expect. And usually we have more stress around the unknown than we do the known. So there's that. And parents, of course, every year, if you're a parent, as I've been, you're running around trying to get your kids ready, school supplies, new clothes, just learning where to drive if it's a new school, how I get there, and that sort of thing.
All right. So let's talk about three things that can help this be a little bit easier. What is something that parents can do, or guardians or aunts or uncles or maybe even big brothers or big sisters, to help make this less stressful?
Okay. The first thing is to help people maintain a sense of normalcy. And that's often what makes people nervous or puts them under stress or in crisis, is when they think something abnormal is occurring. So if instead you emphasize with your children the normalcy of this, that will help them. So, for example, you could say, well, all summer we would get up, have breakfast, and then you got to go out and play with your friends, and then you'd come back home for supper. Well, it's going to be the same. You're going to get up and get dressed. You'll just go to school. And then when you come home, the family will have supper like we always do. So you stress the parts of the day that will be similar and give them that sense of normalcy, that things will remain normal. The essential things will remain normal.
I like that. Now, if you've been able to sleep in till 10:30 or 11, you realize that that won't be normal. That won't be the case when school starts.
Right. And that's fine, too, because you just say to them, well, you'll still get those days when you sleep in. It'll just be on the weekend. So, again, you take whatever seems normal to them or what they're concerned about losing, and you explain to them how they get to maintain it or maintain it in a different form or at a different time. Like, another thing children often say is, I won't ever get to see my friends. And you can say, oh, yes, you will. You'll see your friends. And then just go through it with them. You know, you have all those friends you play soccer with. Well, now you'll see them twice a week at soccer practice. And so on, and go through, like, you'll see your friends at Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts or Sunday school or whatever their now activities will be now that school has begun.
All right. So stress, normalcy, stress, this sort of the things that remain permanent. What's a second thing you can do?
A second thing to do is walk them through their day. Like, my husband's an attorney, so we used to say to our kids every morning, let's go over what's on the docket for today. But you don't have to call it a docket. You can call it just the agenda or what's going to happen today. And every morning, if they can have a sense of what was going to happen, that will help them. Now, when they're moving from their summer program type of life to a school life, often their stress surrounds the unknown, the ambiguity, like what will happen, what will happen when. So if you can, as a parent or an older brother or sister, just say, now we'll probably get up around 6:30, and then we'll get washed and dressed, and then we'll have breakfast, then we're going to walk to the bus stop, then we're going to get on the bus, like whatever it is, go through this to this to this to this, and put all the steps in, even if it's 20 or 30 steps. Because then the child can picture in their mind, like a story, what is going to happen. And so they already feel familiar with it when it happens. They can anticipate. All that fear of the unknown is removed. They can anticipate what's going to happen, and when they walk through it, it'll seem fine to them because it's what they expect.
Is it better for that to be an audio component rather than, say, a schedule on a whiteboard or on a refrigerator?
Both are fine. Children have different styles of learning. I had a child, one of my three children had a visual impairment, and no amount of talking to him helped. I always had to go to the school ahead of time. Even if it was a school we went to last year, it seemed to really help him if we would go to the school and just walk through, like, oh, look, you know, in fact, I would take a day the week before school started and just have like a Tuesday or Wednesday be a school day. And we would just wake up, we'd have our breakfast, I would drive him to school, we'd park the car, we'd get out, we'd walk to his room, and so on. So he really had the complete experience of what it was going to be like. And that really helped him.
Okay, so normalcy, what's on the docket? What's a third thing we can do to make this less stressful?
The third thing is if you perceive your child as having true, you know, concerns and anxiety around it, if you can address their sticking point, and for me this third idea is the notion of sticking points, that sometimes people have something they get stuck on, and then they ruminate on it, they're concerned about it, and then they get afraid of it, and then they're afraid to admit they're afraid. So it's not necessarily the first thing out of the child's mouth, but if you can, through discussion of normalcy and through discussion of the docket, and watching their nonverbal behavior, perceive when their face, on their face, they seem concerned or stressed. You can go back to that and say, now, you know, sometimes when you get on the bus, that can be a concern for people. How do you picture yourself getting on the bus? What do you think might happen there? And let them describe it to you, and then they'll tell you, well, I'm afraid no one will talk to me, or what do I do if there's no place to sit? So they have some concerns about whatever this thing is. I'm using the example of a bus, but it might not be the bus. It could be something else entirely. But whatever their concern is, if you can locate it, then you can address it. And you can address it through various strategies, but the real key for the parent is not to jump in and assume they know what the problem is, but rather to let the child talk to them and to say to the child, well, what do you picture happening? What is the worst thing that could happen? That's always a good question to ask your child. What is the worst thing that can happen? Because then they're going to tell you what their fear is. And then instead of dismissing it by saying, oh, that will never happen, don't do that. Better would be to say, well, what if that would happen? What could you say? What could you do? What would be a good thing to say or do? And then work with them, strategize, so they have a plan for what to do if the worst thing happens. And that might be role-playing. You know, we did that a lot with our kids if they had any concerns, but it can also just be saying, well, there might be many things that could be done there. Let's brainstorm a few ideas. Now, the real plus of this strategy I'm describing is not only does it address whatever your child's sticking point is right now, but it teaches them, if you do this over and over whenever there's a problem with your child, it teaches your child the methodology for how to address concerns in life. That you don't have to ever let a fear defeat you, but rather you face it head on and say, well, what do I think is the worst thing that can happen? And then ask yourself, what will I do if that happens? A brainstorm solution. Now, the real plus of this strategy I'm describing is not only does it address whatever your child's sticking point is right now, but it teaches them, if you do this over and over whenever there's a problem with your child, it teaches your child the methodology for how to address concerns in life. That you don't have to ever let a fear defeat you, but rather you face it head on and say, well, what do I think is the worst thing that can happen? And then ask yourself, what will I do if that happens? A brainstorm solution.
I remember when I was moving into fifth grade, I was going from a small rural school that had six grades in four rooms, and we were being consolidated going into the bigger school that had five separate fifth grade rooms.
Wow.
I was scared. Now I realize I was scared because I thought I wasn't going to be sophisticated enough to go to what we thought was the big city school. But I don't know if I knew that's what it was at the time. What if what if you can't identify as a 10 or 11-year-old what maybe that fear is?
Well, you can say as the parent, well, what do you picture happening? Mm. What's going on in the room? What are you doing? What are the other children doing? What is the teacher doing? And through again, if you can get your child to talk about it, they will tell you what the problem is. Now, they may not use the language that an adult would use, but they could say something like, well, I sit in the wrong seat, and then everybody laughs at me. And then the teacher asks a question, I raise my hand, and I give what I think is the answer, but it turns out I'm wrong, and I get called out for being wrong, and everybody laughs at me again. Something like that, which would be a child's vision of probably not being sophisticated enough and all the bad things that would happen. Or we're told to get out our books, and I get out the wrong book, and somebody elbows me, and it hurts because I got out the wrong book. So you know, if a child could describe this and the parent can say, okay, well, what if you get out the wrong book? Then what's going to happen? What is the worst thing that's going to happen? You know, and then they might say, well, I couldn't follow. And say, well, okay, well, if you can't follow, then you would probably figure out you have the wrong book. So what would be the next thing a person could do? And just kind of work through them, because, I mean, everybody now again pulls out the wrong book. So,
right.
You know, so what would be a good strategy for addressing that? So, again, just to teach your child, really, problem-solving skills, which are good through all of life at every age, of how to address whatever is their sticking point.
Is it a good idea, even if you don't suspect you have a child that might be anxious or nervous about the school year, to just at least ask them about the upcoming year, if you don't suspect it, should you just let sleeping dogs lie?
Well, you can do either. You know, most parents know their child pretty well,
yeah.
So they can see how their child is behaving. Like if a child suddenly gets very quiet that last week, they might be worried about something. You know, when you see a change in behavior, no matter what it is, if they're acting out more or whatever, sleeping in more, it might be that they're anxious about something, so then you could address it. A lot of parents tell me they have a problem getting their children to talk to them. You know, how'd your day go? It was fine. You know, that kind of thing,
right.
Like they never want to say anything. So it's good to develop as a parent 3 or 4 or 5 questions that you ask your kids every day about school, every day. So they anticipate these questions, and it gets to be fun. And you can ask them, like, when you pick them up in the car, so it's a good car conversation, or you can ask them at the dinner table, and then the whole family can have fun. But either way, and there's things like, okay, come on, tell me, dish. What is the most interesting thing that happened today at school? Like, what was the cool thing, the unexpected thing, the crazy thing? And so if you ask those questions, you're going to get some really cute answers. Like, you're going to find out pretty regularly who gets sent to the principal, for example. And what are the wildest things that happen at recess? You're going to hear all about those. So you're going to feel like you're attending to school with your kid. You know, you're going to get, like, the scoop and the skinny. You know, it's kind of fun. But then as you wind down these questions, you can say, so what was the best thing that happened to you at school today? And they'll tell you. And then what is the worst thing that happened today that you wish, ooh, I wish it hadn't gone like that? And then let them tell you. And then you know what it is you need to address, because it's their telling you, in my opinion, this is the worst thing that happened to me today.
Lynn Webb is a professor of communications at the University of Arkansas. She discussed 3 things parents can do to help children ease into a new school year. If there's a 3 things subject you'd like to hear about, let us know. You can email us by sending an email to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.